This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Steve Bobe.
Taking care of business and working overtime.
With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve Bobe.
Welcome to the Money Talk Show. This is your station for talk and business, AM 790. And while big news today, folks, the Dow Jones Industrial Average finally punched through that 20,000 number, closing the day at 20,068, up 155 points. The NASDAQ up 55 points, closed at 56.56. Most stocks across the board up in a positive manner. Be aware that we are still in the sweet spot. It's very easy to assign all of this to the Trump factor. I don't believe that's what's going on. I believe it's enhancing things. Anytime anybody in leadership in a country like ours speaks of lower taxes and lower regulations, that helps markets. Markets always like that, no matter who says it. Doesn't matter what party they represent. Doesn't matter what color they are, whether they have long hair or short hair. That's the kind of news that markets, free markets anyway, seem to like. Historically, for the past 25, 30 years, the gains in the U.S. stock market have almost always been only in October through March. The average return for that six-month period is about 16%, and the average return of the U.S. stock market for 25 years from March through October is zero. It usually doesn't do much during that period. We've heard it called the doldrums, and we call it a sweet spot. The theory is that September is back to school. A lot of money spent there today, big college tuitions, sometimes buying cars, setting up apartments, computers, year-end pension contributions. A lot of salespeople in the business world that earn a lot of their income at the end of the year based on bonuses, based on achievement, can earn as much as half of their income in the second, in the fourth quarter. We have the busiest travel day of the year right in there. We have Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, of course, gifts, gifts, gifts. A lot of spending here in this period of time. Before you know it, it's New Year's, time to party. I'm all for that. But then all of a sudden, around February and March, the eyes of the country turns to income taxes. And it really is quite a lull in things. If you've been in the financial services field, as I've been for almost 40 years now, usually that's the time of year that we're most busy as well, October through March. And then people's minds and hearts turn to taxes and then vacation, I think. And then it gets serious again, you know, in the fall. So that's usually what happens. We usually have pretty good markets right now through March. I do think some of the things we're hearing out of Washington is clearly enhancing that. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Wednesday night, as you know, has become Financial History Night on the program. My son Nathan's here to help me share some of financial history with you all. And then also now we're starting a new program where we're inviting some local entrepreneurs, young people that are self-employed folks, to come onto the show once a month or so to talk to us about the journey that they took to get there. I myself became self-employed in my early 20s and have never been anything but that. My father, who I'm sure is listening right now, auto mechanic, best auto mechanic there ever was, self-employed also from a very, very young age. And Nathan, of course, here is on the same path as well. I've always said that it's, I believe it's easier to do this kind of thing if you've seen it done. I saw my dad do it. I grew up believing I could do it. My son saw me do it. I think he grew up believing that he can do it. The good news is that I think a lot of you could do it. Maybe you just don't have anybody telling you that. Maybe we could play that role for you. And the purpose of this specialty in our program is to encourage listeners to at least to learn about this if they're interested at all. This isn't advice to go out and start a business. It's a very important thing to do. It can be risky if it's done incorrectly. So avoid debt initially. Don't start a brand new business and spend $20,000 that you took a loan on your house to build an office when you can talk on the phone at the kitchen table and they don't know it. These are some of the biggest mistakes I've seen is people try to get too ready too quick. Until the money flows, don't spend anything is my advice in a new business. Anything as long as it's not going to shortchange the service you're delivering. Not there, of course. But I remember years ago a story of someone that told me that they tried a business and they failed and And they had actually spent, I think they said about $40,000 making an office in their house when they didn't need it. It was just telephone work. Could have been done on a parlor couch, you know, in the basement. And now eventually to have a nice office, sure, if you make it. But not until the business is up and running a few years and you've seen profitability. So we're going to talk about concepts of being self-employed. The advantage I have, again, is I've been there for an awful long time, and Nathan's been there for a while, too. And our guests will all be there. So we're going to have in the room every Wednesday, once a month on Wednesdays, just a bunch of people who've got some experience at being self-employed.
I think the one thing we've always kept in mind on the Money Talk show was the word education. And we try to bring things to our listeners that are educate them. And I think this segment that we're going to start doing once a month is really there to try to educate someone who's considering opening their own business.
Yes.
So if you're out there and you're thinking, I want to start going out and making a name for myself, what are some of the things I should be thinking about? What are some of the pitfalls I should be looking out for? And these are the things we're going to be talking to our guests about over the next year to help people who are out there trying to do this sometimes daunting task on their own.
Sure it can be. As I said, it is a lot to think about and to comprehend. But again, if you've seen somebody do it, anybody really, you know,
Sure.
Remember a family member, you know, who you respect and look up to, but just anybody, just to witness it as a young age, you think, well, I guess, you know, my dad's a very bright guy, you know, but in many ways, you know, a man, as you, one day, you're 33, I don't know what age it was, you realize, I'm a hell of a guy, but I'm just a guy.
Right.
There was a time when you thought I was Superman, right, when you were very, very
of
young,
course.
When you were a young boy,
and me too,
so my point is, when you realize, you know, we're all just humans, and we all have good skills, my mom was one of my greatest cheerleaders. And she used to tell me when I was very young that I could do anything I put my mind to. And then to humble me, she said, so can all your friends. I don't know if they have anybody telling them it, though. So her second comment was intended to make me realize I wasn't any better than anybody else. But she still kept pounding home that idea that I could really do anything I wanted to do if I put my mind to it. And so maybe we can be a positive influence on those that are considering it right now. Again, the markets were all very positive today. Things are moving along nicely. Keep your equity mix in your portfolio based on your stage of life, your comfort level, and anticipation of your needs, not on what's happening in the market today. This is the Money Talk Show, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. This is AM 790, your station for talking business. One of my clients asked me not to come back from the breaks too fast, but they like the music on the show. So thanks for those good selections.
Smart man. Poor woman.
Yes.
Way to go, Brett.
Both. Hey, again, this is the Money Talk Show. Wednesday night, once a month on Wednesdays, we're going to be inviting exciting young people into the studio to tell us about their business. And tonight we have Jessica Rhodes. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here.
Tell us about your little business and all you can share with us.
Yeah, I loved what you were saying about, you know, following your dad and then Nathan seeing you, because my dad is also an entrepreneur. So I've been seeing entrepreneurship in my family since I was about 13 years old. So it always just seemed like, oh, yeah, I can definitely do this. I'm not going to fail. You know, so there's all these stats out there about like, oh, most businesses fail and all this risk. And I went into it. I started my business when I was, I came up with the idea of becoming self-employed when I was 24, and then was full-time in my own business at the age of 25, at the same time that my first child was born. So not the kind of advice I would give most people, start a business when you have a baby. But that's what life handed me, and that's what I ran with. And so I started my business as a virtual assistant. So I was working as a freelancer, doing client support work and social media management, basically anything that I could do, you know, by the hour on my own time in my home office. And I started booking my clients for podcast interviews and finding guests for their podcasts. And that was really, I started getting people to ask me more about that. And so about 4 or 5 months into my business, I was at a point where I wanted to grow. I wanted to scale it. I didn't want to be working by the hour as a contractor. So I basically talked to my dad about it, and I was like, what can I do to build my business more? And we came up with the idea to create an agency just for the booking of podcast interviews. So I created Interview Connections and basically have grown it since then. So I moved away from the hour, you know, charging by the hour model, came up with, you know, flat rates, and it's just grown dramatically. I mean, podcasting has exploded. We have around 100 clients, and 75% of our clients are entrepreneurs who get booked as a guest on shows. So a lot more people want to be a guest on shows. So we're really helping people get publicity in their target markets. And I've grown a team. So we have about 10 guest bookers. They're all work at home independent contractors. And I have a full-time employee who oversees all of the booking and all of the guest bookers.
You know, one of the things that Dad and I do in the office in our jobs is we talk about risk a lot with clients, how to manage risk, how to perceive risk. When you started your business, or when you started, you said about 4 or 5 years ago you thought about doing it, what were some of the risks that you perceived in pursuing this? And have those perceptions changed? Do you still have the same risks? Are there, you know, have they changed at all, those risks?
I think one of the benefits of starting a business so young is you don't really see risk. Like, you're kind of naive to it.
I'm 58. I wouldn't want to do it now. Right?
I mean, I just had this unwavering confidence that, like, of course it would work out.
Right.
I'm just overly optimistic. And in many ways, if I knew then what I've learned and what I know now, I probably wouldn't have gone into business for myself. But I just did it. I said, I'm going to just do the best that I can and just assume everything will work out. And so I didn't think about the risk. And now, yeah.
I think making good decisions reduces the risk a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You seem very bright yourself and responsible. So you probably didn't make a lot of those silly mistakes people make when they're starting. Like, usually it's based in ego,
mm-hmm.
overspending initially until you see the cash flow.
Yeah, and that was one of the biggest first things, is that I didn't go into it to, you know, be famous and to make a lot of money. My primary goal was to have an income
with
the
home-based
business.
Yeah. Something you enjoy doing.
And even my first couple of services that I offered, I wasn't thrilled to be doing them. Like, I was checking links on some of my clients' websites. It was below what I, you know, went to college for and my work experience. But
sure.
Whenever you go into a new industry, whether it's in a new business or in a new job, you have to kind of work your way up and learn. I had to learn marketing. I knew
sure.
nothing about marketing. But once I learned it, then I could kind of build up and do things that I wanted to do.
You know, one of the things we mentioned last week when we were talking about doing this segment was how your significant other can play a big role
in
when you decide. And you talked about my mom,
your wife,
being a big supporter of you. And I wondered...
Tell her again what I said. She didn't hear that show.
She listened tonight?
She was busy. She probably listened tonight, yeah.
Yes, Mom. He's very positive of your support.
Completely.
Yeah. So my question to you, Jessica,
unwavered,
is...
Unwavered, actually. Would be the
I know you are married. I actually know your husband, Jamie. Was he very supportive of you? Was he at all apprehensive about you going into business by yourself?
Yeah, he was supportive for sure. But there was definitely hard moments, I would say, for sure, in the first year. So I remember there being moments like probably in the first 6 to 9 months when I had started to make some investments in the business in terms of, you know, going to trade shows and conferences, more money was going out, and like the debt was growing. And there was, even though he's always been super supportive of me, I think you make a really good point. If your spouse isn't on board, forget about it. I mean, you need that.
And it's very normal for a great spouse to have some concerns.
Yeah.
Very normal, right.
And, you know, my husband has a full-time job. So I think that, I'd be interested to see the life of a couple that both of them are entrepreneurs. That's like a whole other ball game. But like, he's a little bit more, you know, he plans things. He's got a dependable, you know, predictable income. So we kind of balance each other out in that way. But there was definitely some apprehension and nerves when more money was going out than coming in, when more investments were being made in the business. And I hadn't quite gotten to the point where, like, my business wasn't incorporated yet. The bank accounts hadn't been separated yet. Because when you first start, it's like all the income, it was just going into one personal bank account.
Right.
So that, I guess that's a risk, is
most
self-employed people, like, why would I separate them? Like, all of the money coming in needs to go to me personally. And then once you kind of build up enough money, then you can say, okay, now the business has its own bank account. So, yeah, there were definitely some nerves, but he's always been really supportive.
Good. What about employees or subcontractors. Do you have any employees or subcontractors? And what are the challenges of working with subcontractors and employees?
Yes, I have a pretty good sized team. So 10 independent contractors, and up until about a month ago, I've had all independent contractors, and that's been great because I have a very labor intensive business. It's service based. So as my business grows, when I get new clients, I'm constantly looking at, okay, how much bandwidth does my team have? I always need people to be able to, you know, offer the service. And so the great thing about independent contractors is that they have the freedom to, you know, work their own schedule. Obviously, speaking of like taxes, you're not dealing with all the employment taxes and things like that, but then there's a little bit less control because you can't tell them you need to work these hours on these days. And sometimes they'll want to travel for a week and you just have to deal with that because they're not your employee.
Right.
So there's definitely some pros and cons to it, but I, you know, reached a point in my business where I needed that full-time employee because I needed the dependability. Because when you get to a certain point, there's too many clients, there's too much business, which is a good problem to have,
right.
But it was too much just for me to handle. So one of my independent contractors became employee.
Are the administrative duties heavily concentrated on the employee?
Yes.
I would think it would be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's doing every single day. She's calling clients to check in with them, just really making sure that client care is there. And again, yeah, the administrative duties.
The contractors are the contact people.
They're booking the interviews.
Right. They load the conveyor belt.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
In front of the belt.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Get it. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business. 437-5000 if you want to say hello to Jessica Rhodes and ask her questions about starting a business. I think it's a wonderful idea. I started very, very young, did pretty well, but it took quite a while for me in my field to get to a real, you know, the dreamy kind of situation. It probably took about 20 years for me to get there. But along the way, there were bumps. I did have doubts on occasion when things were difficult. But in my heart, when I closed my eyes at the end of the day, I never thought for 1 minute of doing anything else. And for me, it was the freedom. I felt, more so as a younger man, I'm getting close to 60 now, but when I was younger, I always felt that I would rather work a 60-hour week and be in control of it than 30 and not. I wasn't afraid of work, and I wasn't afraid of hours, I wasn't afraid of challenges, I was afraid of being controlled. And that's what drove me to my self-employment madness.
where do you see the business that you're in and your business, how is it going to evolve? I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges, I think, and we're experiencing that in our office right now, actually, is trying to predict where our industry is going to go. And, you know, how to stay on top of that curve is one of the hardest things to do. How do you perceive your business changing and evolving as time goes on?
Yeah, that is a great question. And that's really where I am right now, because when I started my business, I looked around and there were no other guest booking agencies for podcasters. I was the only one. It was awesome for a long, I mean, it's still great, but it was great for a long time because there were literally no competitors doing what I was doing. So I was like, this is great. But now there's a lot of people starting this business, this kind of business, because there is a need for it. So for me, the big challenge right now is figuring out, you know, how to, you know, I'm in the low to mid six figure revenue stretch. So now I'm looking at how to get to that next big milestone, you know, what kind of service add-ons. So the thing that I'm going to do is survey my clients, you know. Clients have all the answers. What do you need? And figure out how to offer that, whether it's like a specific kind of service they really want. How can I provide that? Do I need to, you know, hire this kind of employee to provide this kind of service? How do I charge for it? Because that is the name of the game, is just standing out in the marketplace among your competition, because just being the best isn't always the answer.
Only one thing's better than being the best at what you do, and that's being the only one that does what you do. But that doesn't last very long for anyone.
Exactly.
New industry, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it becomes a commodity after a while.
I thought you were going to say my favorite line, one of your favorite your lines I love, is that similarities don't sell, but differences do, right?
Similarities don't sell, differences do.
Right. So
what do you do that one up the street doesn't do?
Yeah.
What's so special about you?
And asking clients and communicating with clients, and you're absolutely right. They have the answers, right, for trying to figure out what is it that they need and just trying to provide a better service.
Yeah.
So stop selling them all the time and talk to them for a while.
Right. Exactly.
Be
just
amazed.
Listen.
You might be amazed what happens.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Money Talk Show, Wednesday evening special program. Jessica Rhodes is our guest tonight, and we're going to talk to her when we return. Welcome back to the Money Talk Show, AM 790. This is your station for talk and business. Jessica Rhodes is here tonight to tell us about her company, Interview Connections. And Nathan and I are enjoying her company and her journey of entrepreneurship.
Marketing is a huge part of anybody's business. And there's also networking, which you hear a lot about. And I often wonder how you draw the line between what is marketing and what is networking. And I'm sure the line gets blurred a lot of times. So could you talk a little bit about your business, how you market or network, and which services that do you pay for? What other services do you just hustle and get out there, your name out there, that doesn't cost money but costs sweat and hours?
Yeah, so much of marketing, networking, relationship building. It's so much of my marketing has just been word of mouth. So for a long time, all of my clients came by word of mouth, which I think is marketing, right? Because, sure. They're the best marketing is word of mouth advertising from other people. And so I do a lot of content marketing. That's really where my marketing is, producing my own podcasts, doing videos on YouTube, putting them on Facebook. And so there's a little bit of investment there in terms of, I pay somebody to edit my podcast and put it on iTunes and things like that. But that's pretty much free marketing, organic marketing. And the most money that I've invested in marketing has to do with going to conferences and trade shows in my industry. So actually getting booths. First, it was just attending, which is an investment too, to get the ticket and the travel
and
everything.
Right.
Yeah, which,
out of production.
Yeah.
Also,
yeah.
While you're there.
Yes, exactly. So, and I, I bring staff members to, work the booth with me. So that, I've invested upwards of $5,000 in being at a conference, which has, it brought a really nice return pretty fast, because that's where, those are where my prospective clients were, and they signed up right there with me. So, that's kind of how I market my business, is just the content marketing and then actually getting out in front of people face to face.
Did you have any experiences with marketing that didn't work? That you did something, you thought, this isn't working, I'm going to try something else.
Yes. A couple months ago, I thought, I'm going to do live webinars every week. I'm going to go to my office. I'm going to do a live webinar. I see all these other people doing them. It must work great. And so every Thursday night for about a month, I went to my office. I put on a live stream webinar, and there were people there attending them, asking questions. I'm like, oh, this is great. And then I realized they were all telling me, this is so great, but I can't afford your services. And I thought, I'm doing something that's getting in front of people, but not the right people. So I was spending all this time and energy marketing to people who couldn't afford me. So I just stopped doing that.
The targeting of the audience is just as important as what you're using to target, I guess you would say, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I try to just focus on, I look at, okay, who are the clients that are best for me, that, are the smallest pain in my butt and pay the most money? And so I work to, craft my marketing messages and my copywriting to attract that kind of person. And those people were not watching webinars on Thursday at 7 o'clock.
Right. Depending on what business you start, usually there's initial capital that you use to start up. So if you're going to open a restaurant, for example, usually it's really hard to do without borrowing money. Dad and I talk about this off air a lot. This one industry, if I came to you and wanted to start a business and you would have said, I don't think so, it would have been.
Yep, anything to do with a restaurant or a bar or a lounge, forget it. The failure rate is so high.
It's so high, yeah. I know you've got, it's not as much overhead as that, but
right.
Did you find yourself in a position when you were, starting out that you were borrowing any money, and how long did it take you to stop borrowing money and really to turn a profit, I guess?
Yeah, good question. Oh, the money journey is, that's the hardest one for an entrepreneur, because even in my kind of business where it was mostly freelance, bootstrapped, it's not like I said, I'm going to start a business and all of a sudden I need capital. Every so often I would need, I used credit cards for a while, and we actually, because it, takes a little bit of time before you kind of separate all the business stuff from the personal stuff, we racked up quite a bit of personal credit card debt to allow me to, first of all, take a huge income cut, because I went from having a full-time job to being a freelancer,
sure.
Barely making any money every month. So there was personal credit card debt, and then as I separated the personal finances from the business finances, then the business could grow, and then I could start paying myself a salary from the business. which that's nice because then it becomes a predictable personal income rather than the business revenue just fluctuating all the time.
That's when the spouse starts to get happy usually.
Yes.
Predictable
yes.
paycheck.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
Again, understandable. Very, very, very understandable.
100%. Yeah. And I actually did get a, because I have staff and labor costs, I did get a line of credit from my bank because there were some months, probably about a year ago, where it was a little bit tight in terms of making, like, because I have a lot of clients that are paying me, you know, I've got revenue coming in every day throughout the month. So there's some weeks where it goes up and then other weeks where I have big expenses. So I got a line of credit at the bank just to make sure if there was an off day and I needed to pay all my contractors that I could cover that. And I've used it once, paid it back within a week and haven't had to use it again. So it's the business has been profitable and I have the credit there if I need it, but I haven't needed it, which is nice.
Right. You never want to use it if you don't need it.
Exactly. Right.
Didn't buy yourself a brand new car 1 month into it. Big shot.
No.
Okay. Yeah. Very wise. You don't seem like you seem too smart.
No,
for that.
She's a Dave Ramsey
we're,
disciple.
Yeah, and
I believe,
we're
yes.
we got the Dave Ramsey book. So
oh, beautiful.
Yeah, we're working on and we've the past few years has been a big journey both business wise and with our personal finances because you know I'm 29 years old. My husband's a few years older than me, but you know we're working on paying off a lot of debt from you know travels in our early 20s and
yeah, sure.
But yeah.
Just being that conscious of it, you'll be in much better shape
exactly.
at retirement. I have a lot of clients that still have mortgages in retirement, and it's not a disaster. Many of them are still living fine. You just have to have you know $1,000 a month extra income to do that.
Yeah.
But it's a good retirement plan should be based initially on being debt free. I think by retirement anyway.
Yeah.
I wanted to be debt free by 45. That was my goal. I didn't make it. I'm close. But
yeah.
By 45. But I always had crazy goals for myself, and I always thought if I fell short of them, I would still achieve something.
Mm-hmm.
So my goals were always very, very aggressive.
Yeah.
One time early in my career, only one time, my wonderful wife said, honey, you think maybe you should have a job? I think she said that once. It may be year 4 or 5. That was 30 years ago. And that was it. That was the one time she said it in a very sweet tone, and after that, she never, and every time I was made a big move, she gave me cards to tell me, wrote out a hand card, how much you believed in me, and do whatever you think, and I'm right there with you. And I said it the other night, honey, and I hope you're listening, because she was busy that night. That's an important part of it. And
mm-hmm.
it's understandable that a spouse would be concerned. Doesn't mean they don't
right.
believe in you.
Right.
You've never done this before.
Right.
You're young. Look how young you were when you were
yeah.
doing that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it is important to talk to your spouse, maybe the most important one. If you don't have some support, I would hesitate to go forward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you need yeah. to have that support because entrepreneurs...
It may take a while.
Oh, yeah. And as entrepreneurs, we're so visionary. Like, even yesterday, we were at the grocery store, and I had this, like, big light bulb moment for my business, and I was, like, thinking about it, and my husband, Jamie, goes, hey, I need you here right now. Like, I'm like, sorry.
Hey, have you ever heard the term, in a financial way, in some couples, anyway, one person is the gardener, the other one's the flower?
Yes.
You sound like more the flower.
Yeah, a little bit, I
yeah.
think.
Yeah, you're a little more risk taker personality.
100%.
Is usually the flower.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
and the other person's a little more steady Eddie, would rather see things consistent. They'll go along,
yes.
they'll support,
yes.
but it's not their nature.
Absolutely. Well,
fully. That's the gardener. Yeah, my wife would be more the I'm more the gardener.
Yeah.
My wife's more the other way, actually. Actually, I think we're both got a dose of that. You know, it'll all be okay in the long run. We
mm-hmm.
both have that. Wasn't that worried about it, really. We believed it would work.
Right.
And I thought it would work quicker than it did, I'll
yeah.
tell you the truth.
Yeah.
But always believed it would work, and you know what it did.
Right. So we're about ready for a break, and when we come back, let's talk a little bit about retirement planning when you're an entrepreneur. I mean, that's what we do for a living, Dad, so we'll talk to Jessica a little bit how she tackles
that challenge. Very
challenging
also. Welcome back to Money Talk on AM 790. This is your station for talk and business. A little curveball for you tonight. Wednesday night, usually the financial history night on the program, which has been a big hit, by the way, Nate. Thanks.
No problem.
Very well received. Now, once a month, we're inviting young entrepreneurs like Jessica Rhodes to come in and talk to us about their journey. And she is the boss of Interview Connections.
So, Jess, Dad and I are retirement planners, financial planners. And a lot of our clients are self-employed, and that's because when you are a traditional employee, you have options for a 401k plan. Sometimes if it's a nonprofit, you have a 403b, or if you're a state worker, you gotta maybe get a pension. So a lot of our clients are self-employed because they need to set up an IRA, or sometimes some of them have a SEP, which is a simplified employee pension. Did you have to seek out some type of retirement vehicle for yourself?
Yes. Yeah. So I had, you know, the 401k when I had a full-time job.
Right.
And then after that, I switched to an IRA. And so I know that I put in a small amount of money into that. But as we're paying down personal debt, we've actually, that's one of the things that we stopped putting money into, mm-hmm. to focus on
paying debt.
Yeah.
That's Dave Ramsey's teaching.
Yes.
That's right. I agree with it.
Exactly.
Him. I agree.
Right,
I agree.
Right. Yeah. So that was put on pause, but is there. The account is there for, I think we put some money in because, like, tax planning and everything.
Sure, yeah, reductions on your income.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't, we talk about this on the air sometimes, but if you wanted to put, you know, IRAs have a limit of amount. You can put $5,500 away, or if you're over a certain age, you can put in $6,500. But a simplified employee pension, a SEP, would allow you to put more.
15% of your after expenses profit.
Right, right.
But the trick with the SEP is, you got to share the pie.
Right.
So if you've got a lot of entry-level employees and that you don't want to share that pie with them maybe quite yet until they've been around a while and proved themselves, it's not the best plan.
Mm-hmm.
Simple IRAs have become very popular. Good mm-hmm. choice as well.
Right, right.
Yeah,
yeah, we've done a lot of those in the office. What about keeping a track of expenses? Do you do a lot of budgeting? Do you have any like software that you use at all to do budgeting? Or
yeah, I mean, my biggest expense is labor, you know,
in right,
the
sure.
independent. So, you know, I look at, we do budgeting. I mean, I'm not big on like long line item budgets. That's probably my flaw as an entrepreneur, is I don't stop and like
that's
do a budget.
That's the gardener's job.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And that's what
not
we're doing now is like, yeah. And Jamie's super good because my husband is the CFO and the bookkeeper. So he, and yep. sometimes I'll, you know, not let him know about a certain expense. He's like, Jess, like you have to, you have
right,
to tell
right,
me. But
right.
he makes it all work. So it's good to have that good partner.
Yes. Both styles are valuable.
Yes,
and they work
exactly.
well together.
Because
yes.
I know how to close sales and I know how to bring in money. Not super good on the spreadsheets. But I right. work hard to get my nose in the numbers as much as I can stand it. I know that my business is profitable. I know, you know, I have a sense of like what I can pay somebody to do a certain job and what's too much and stuff like that. So,
right.
yeah.
Not always, but in general, a new business is usually a floodlight, meaning you do whatever you can.
Mm-hmm.
And as you progress, you want to become a laser beam.
Yes.
Not narrow it down to a few things that you do very well. And I have a little advice for our listeners as we're going to wrap things up pretty soon. And that is when it comes to your own skill sets, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you've heard many times about work on your strengths, identify your strengths and weaknesses, then work on your weaknesses. I say no. You end up with a bunch of strong weaknesses. What I did, almost unconsciously, looking back on it now, it turned out to be good for me anyway, was I identified what my weaknesses were and got rid of them.
Yes.
Hired people.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, outsource the tasks that you're just not good at.
Just don't have the natural skill set for.
Yeah, no, exactly. No. I'm all about really focusing on your strengths and hiring people to yep. do the things that you're not yep. very good at.
So identify your strengths and weaknesses, delegate away your weaknesses, and push your strengths through the roof.
Yes.
I think that's a more effective way of building a small business myself.
I completely agree.
Hey, here's an interesting question I wanted to ask you. Would you say that you work 40 hours a week? Do we say work more than 40 hours a week, less? And how about when you first started? I mean, I hear stories, horror stories, people when they first open businesses where they're working 60, 70 hours a week. You know, did you find that way?
I don't think I've ever worked more than 40 hours a week.
You keep it.
I work
keep
about.
It on
a limit? I'm in my office about 10 to 3.
Yeah. Good
sometimes
for you.
4:30, but that was a big part of it.
That's another thing that drives the other spouse out of the business is you're gone constantly.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and then you lose that support too. So
Jamie might be shaking his head as he's listening to this because even though I can tell you the hours that I'm in my office, I am constantly. I mean, I've got my phone all the time,
sure,
I'll
yeah.
be checking it. Ooh. So it's kind of hard because
it's
not like you're
yeah.
logging in and out,
right.
you
sure,
know.
Sure, sure.
So in the office, focus, uninterrupted work time, 30 hours a week, but I am always checking my phone, answering texts and questions. So. Right.
And it depends on how productive and efficient you are. I know there are some people that will get a lot more done in 30 hours than another beast will get done in 50.
Work expands the time you give it. So I've learned that, if I'm going to be in my office 40, 50 hours a week, there's always more work that can be done. But if I say I'm only going to work 30 hours a week, suddenly... Right. The work still gets done.
Another thing I found was, too, I enjoy piling on, which means I would rather have a super busy day straight there, because I'm in the mood, I'm in the groove, I'm there, rather than split that activity over 2 days.
Yes.
I'd rather have it all in one day and be really more tired at the end of that day, and the next day a more thinking, methodical day.
Yeah, I like batching my calls. I try to have as many calls in one day. I stopped working on Fridays. My kids don't go to school on Fridays, so I just don't schedule any calls those days. And on the days that I do a ton of calls, I leave feeling energized. But if I only have, one call at 10 a.m., another call at 1, then there's all this time where I'm just, I agree with you. Batching and just getting as much done in a small amount of time.
Yeah, I think that some of us, anyway, me, I'm a one thing at a time guy, I'm not a multitasker. But if I get a head of steam on something, I can feel it, and I do it better once I'm rolling. So I didn't want large breaks in between activity. Wind me up and let me go, and maybe I can do in one day what I would normally do in two, and the other day will be more cerebral.
Yes.
Which is usually where the best decisions are made.
Yeah, I agree.
In that quieter time.
Yeah.
Do you find it like on one days you'll say like, okay, like on Tuesdays I'll do my phone calls, on Wednesdays I do this, on Thursdays I do that, or is it kind of just all sprinkled out over the week?
It's kind of sprinkled out. So most of my time is either doing my podcast interviews or sales calls or new client calls. And so they're kind of all sprinkled out throughout the week because I'm meeting with so many different people in a lot of different time zones that if I were to say I only do my sales calls on Tuesday, then I might be waiting weeks till I can get on somebody else's schedule. So I'm sprinkled out, but I know other people that will say, I do everything, this day, this kind of call only on this day. And so that works for some people, but I haven't done that. I just keep it between the hours that I'm in my office. Like, I don't schedule calls before 10, and I don't schedule calls after 4.
Cool. Well, we're about to wrap this up. Jessica, you are a great first guest that we had.
Thank you.
I guess the only other question I'd ask you to close out tonight was there anything that you look back on your young journey so far that you would do differently, I guess, if you could do it over again with your business?
I wouldn't do anything differently. I mean, I could probably think of something, but I think I really believe that even if there are mistakes along the way, they're just learning lessons. They're just expensive lessons.
Right.
Hopefully not too expensive. Right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I always thought as long as you don't make the same mistake twice.
Yes, exactly.
You'll always
be good.
Well,
what's the old adage? Learning from your mistakes is wise. Learning from others' mistakes is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer that technique myself, learning from others' mistakes myself. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you for joining us this weekend. For about 25 years, we've been on the air. And, of course, tune in tomorrow night for Don Sowa right here on AM 790, your station for talk and business.
Of all of the people that I used to know, most never adjusted to the great big world. I see them lurking in bookstores, working for the public radio. And the babies around, the sack on their back, moving careful and slow. It's money that matters. You hear what I say? It's money that matters. And the USA.